Welcome. Welcome to Castavis. I'm Christian Colley. He's James McLean. And we are here with a load of things going on really around us. And we're trying to just focus on one particular thing, which is going to turn into lots of things because we're kind of roughly, genuinely talking about Comic-Con, aren't we?
Which itself is kind of like a allegory for the sheer saturation of media in the global market today, isn't it?
Yes, you could say that.
What do you talk about? What do you talk about at Comic-Con? What do you watch on a broader, you know, on a broader scheme of things?
Yeah, I mean, if you went to Comic-Con, you wouldn't be able to do all of Comic-Con, would you? I mean, a long time. I mean, even 20 years ago, you probably could have just about been able to do all of Comic-Con, but now, no, you couldn't. 30 years ago, was Comic-Con a thing 30 years ago?
Yeah.
You could have done it all maybe then? I don't know. It's insane how big these things have got, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, it's, I think, again, it just shows how interconnected and integrated the industries are, isn't it? That's why the tug from comics comes from, you know, that association, not necessarily in the industry itself, but also interests.
But, I mean, as well, the other thing about this is, I mean, if you went to kind of a small, even a small convention, like just a convention of whatever, Star Trek, Doctor Who, Teletubbies, whatever, I don't know. You'll find someone in costume. And Comic-Con's obviously taken on a life of its own. And isn't just, you know, isn't just people turning up and seeing their favourite people announcing stuff. Isn't just like cosplaying. It's almost like, it's almost a pop-up theme park, isn't it? In many ways. Not with rides, but with with panels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was over in the States early 2000s and I missed it. I was there as a student and I missed it by about a couple of weeks.
Right.
But I did go to Atlanta's Dragon Con while we were talking still at the time, because it was a few years ago, but we've been doing this for a few years. And that's obviously a smaller variant, but even that itself is, again, like you said, the sheer weight of, I don't know. There are words for it, but that sort of engagement, that sort of not just there to see the shows, but be the shows and to represent the shows and represent your passions is just fascinating. And the level of accuracy is even back in those early 2000s. One of my friends who was at Orange County, and she still does great cosplay stuff, I think, but I remember the time being amazed that she would go down into LA and actually get properly fitted with the latex for a Batgirl costume, you know, and that meant a full mold of her body, you know, the level of detail. I mean, we only have to look at Brian Terranova, our occasional colleague, and you know, the detail that goes into his work, into his representation, is incredible, down to, you know, the very specific colors and shades of particular props. You know, these are very important to him.
It's getting accurate, isn't it? Screen accurate.
I suppose that is why I've never got into cosplay, because I've always felt that no matter how screen accurate you are, you'll always look like a second grade version of what you are aspiring to be. It's not like people who can sort of build replica models of various things, but as a person, our physiques and our, you know, a lot of what we represent is as human beings. Emulating another human being will always look like an emulation. And I don't like looking like a second-rate version of anything, apart from myself, in which I am a third-rate version.
So there's a lot of things, so much going on at Comic-Con. Satiate your need for Doctor Who related information, there is a Star Trek and Doctor Who crossover on the Star Trek Lower Decks mobile game and the Doctor Who Lost in Time mobile game, which is blowing my mind slightly. I haven't quite got my head around exactly what's happening here. It's a collaboration which, according to Kevin Jorg, I don't know, head of games at BBC, says the collaboration offers a unique opportunity to explore a brand new storyline where the Doctor and Star Trek characters can work together. I wonder if there'll be any mention of the other time the Doctor and Star Trek met.
I mean, the comics.
The comics, yeah, which was the 11th Doctor, not the 10th Doctor. And this appears to be the 10th Doctor and not the 14th Doctor, which a few people have raised eyebrows about. David Tennant's turning into Tom Baker, isn't he?
There seems to be, I mean, I was looking at social media and there seemed to be actually a lot of complaints about it.
Yeah, which I mean, it seems fair to me.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a good sign because a lot of the complaints were, you've got a current Doctor, why are we using Tennant again? Yeah. And as much as Tennant's loved, I think there's a nice notion there that, you know, you've got your lead, your flagship at the moment. Should you not be using your flagship? But then maybe it's again, I suspect it's possibly down to that Tennant is still symbolically connected to Doctor Who in a far greater way than Gatwer or Whittaker or Capaldi or even Smith is. That if you were to create a Doctor Who icon to go on that game, maybe you would go with Tennant.
Does seem strange, though. And there's what else is going on Doctor Who wise with Comic Con?
There's the spin-off series.
That's right, yes. Which is called The War Between the Land and the Sea?
It's a very long title.
It is, isn't it?
Because what fascinates me about the title is that, you know, I've had good grace to speak to BBC commissioners of late, and there was one who was saying that, you know, one of the most important things when you think of a title for a show is you've got to think of its title length in relation to see, my brain's going now. My brain can't think of words. You're going to have to cut this, I'm afraid.
Okay.
The episode, what's the episode guide thing? EPG? Is that what am I after?
I don't... Electronic Program Guide, yes.
Yes. the EPG. I'm sure that slice can go on to Patreon. The EPG. I'll say that sentence again. So that you've got to think of the title in consideration of the EPG.
Yeah.
The Electronic Program Guide. So you want to make sure that you don't have so many letters that it won't be visible when people are looking through. You want the shorter titles is really what you're after, because the name of that show is these days its main selling point, because there's just not the money to be ploughing vast amounts of advertising and marketing into every show.
Yeah.
So the visibility on the EPG is really important. So a long title like
characters.
That, yeah, which is pretty much double what he would suggest. So I think that's kind of interesting as well in choice of title. It's a really interesting title, and also the title gives no real relationship to Doctor Who or the Whoniverse.
No, it doesn't.
Which makes it very obscure in terms, again, of connecting it to other shows, which, I mean, the whole point of having a spin-off is that it comes with the audience of a previous show. That's why you do a spin-off. And if your spin-off doesn't have a clear connection to the previous show, does that damage it?
Class! Sorry.
Yeah, yes.
So Disney and the BBC have announced this jointly, and it stars Russell Tovey and Gugu Mbatha-Raw. Russell Tovey and Gugu Mbatha-Raw have both previously been in Doctor Who in the first Russell T Davies era. Russell Tovey was in... He was Alonso in Voyage of the Damned. And Gugu Mbatha-Raw is Martha Jones' sister, Tish.
Yeah.
Reprisal of those characters, we don't know. Gemma Redgrave is Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, and Alexander Deviant is Colonel Ibrahim.
I think the two are meant to be totally new characters.
Right.
I think that was confirmed at Comic-Con.
Well, that's good, because it's been a long time.
Yeah, and obviously I was doing a podcast, which is largely around Doctor Who. You'd think that we would closely follow the things of Doctor Who, but I don't really know. But I'm pretty sure that it hasn't been said what their roles are. And to me, it makes me wonder whether they are both playing Silurians or sea creatures or, you know, sea devils are probably going to be involved. But I'd be surprised they're playing sea devils. But I wonder whether they're going to be in prosthetic.
Interesting.
Which might make sense, because people are like, oh, God, you know, how can we do this with new characters? And as you say, yeah, it's been a long time. So they could just come back as new characters, or alternatively, maybe they are prosthetic up. Because if it's going to be a show which sounds to be about the two sides, invariably, both sides are going to have casting, you know, known casting. So it's quite likely that those two are playing on that side of the fence.
We should probably, I mean, I know we've mentioned the title and everything. It's a terrible title for a TV show, regardless of the length. It's just a terrible title. It's like an epilogue title or something.
Yeah, or a book. I could see it as, a volume three in some, I don't know, American fantasy a trilogy. Mm. The second book in it, I could imagine, or like you say, an episode's title to a long running TV show. It does sound like an old sort of Star Trek, the original series sort of title.
Yes, it does.
So yeah, it is a very odd title. I am surprised on that. Again, not just because it's kind of generic, but also, like as I said, in terms of actually selling your show, it's quite a difficult one to sell.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, maybe they'll change. I don't think they will by now. I think it's too late. I don't think it's a placeholder or anything. So yeah, I think this is what we're going to get, which is bizarre.
Hello, Christian here. I'm just interrupting this podcast to let you know that we have relaunched our Patreon. There are three options that you can choose from to support Casterbus. We have a £1 option, a £4 option, and an £8.50 option. These are all monthly, and the £4 and £8.50 option both come with a 7-day free trial, which I think is quite a great option to take. You can find out more at patreon.com/Casterbus. We'd really appreciate it if you could support this and help us in our ambition of creating more material for you, podcasts, reading materials, and possibly more. But if you can't support us on Patreon, it's fine. But it would be great if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Now, back to the podcast. There's another major franchise that is relying on past stars. It isn't only Doctor Who that's doing this. For a start off, you've got Deadpool and Wolverine, which, you know, that's nothing new about that in terms of its announcement or anything. There's a load of people turning up in that movie, including various Deadpools, various Wolverines, and also Captain America actor Chris Evans playing the character he played before he was Captain America.
Well, have you seen the film? Because I didn't know that.
Spoiled it? Well, you've seen the trailer.
Yes. Well, I don't watch the trailer.
Sorry.
That's exactly
why
don't watch the trailer. Well,
Damn. I just spoiled a movie for James. I'm so sorry, James. If I cut this bit out... No, that didn't work like that, does it?
No.
Getting back on point, Robert Downey Jr., he's returning to the Marvel Cinematic Universe as Doctor Doom. Now, I have lots of problems with the Fantastic Four and how the marketing is for the Fantastic Four. And how, actually, to be honest with you, I think I'm one of the few people who liked the original Fantastic Four movies with Owen Grufford and Chris Evans. Mm. So, but this is like mad casting, isn't it? To bring this big actor back, who's kind of stayed away from the movies, the Marvel movies, for about 5 years, 6 years.
But that's the nature of the way we work now. And I've seen a lot of people calling this stunt casting.
Yeah.
I don't think it is in any more of a way than any other bringing any actor that you have. Your principal character, any principal actors tend to be to some degree, especially if they're sort of long running, if they're big blockbusters, will be hopefully names that people will know. That's why, you know, that's why we see The Rock in so many films. That's why Harrison Ford has got this long legacy and people refer to it, because they are a way for the industry to manage its risk, because it's a risky industry, isn't it? We don't know how everyone's going to feel. We don't know what their tastes are by the time the film comes out, let alone when you start it. So it is very risky. So, you know, those are your three key things. Your key things are your who stars in it. That might bring people in. Is it an adaptation or sequel? Because that will bring people in if they like the previous. And of course, is the genre at the moment popular? Because if a genre is in vogue, people will go and see that genre. So those are ways the industry's tried to manage risk. So yeah, you can say this is stunt casting, but it's no bigger stunt casting than anything else being announced at San Diego Comic Con. It's no more stunt casting than Harrison Ford, being the Red Hulk, or, oh God, even to some degree, Robert Downey Jr. being brought in as Iron Man. Because, yeah, okay, he had baggage then. Yes, there were concerns from the studio about his baggage. But ultimately, they knew that name was a known name. He had, you know, he had a certain amount of capital to it. And that's just how the industry works. So why is this a big surprise? I think it's kind of cool. Because, I don't know, I think it'd be... I know people would love him to come back as Iron Man.
Yeah.
But surely that would be your argument of that the people who are against this, which are largely sort of saying this is proof that Disney and the Marvel MCU has run out of steam and they're trying to do desperate measures to bring people back into the cinema and get it going again. I think the issue to the cinema has nothing to do with MCU. I think that's just, you know, as we know, it's a general issue, is getting people to the cinema is a lot harder now. And if you've got big budgets, that's even more of a risk, which these superhero films do. But I've lost my train on that because it's hot today.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sue me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's stunt casting in that way. I think it's all about. I think it's a lot of it is to do with publicity, which I think they would have been doing regardless of how Disney is doing, the MCU is doing. And actually, if you look at things like Rotten Tomatoes, if you look at the, well, perhaps Rotten Tomatoes or not, I think it is in Rotten Tomatoes. I saw a social media post a while ago, which actually showed the top rated films in the MCU. And most of them are actually post-Endgame. It still has a lot of popularity, that franchise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think it's about it dipping and suddenly there's stunt casting to try and stop the dip. I think they've done something, they've realised, as the industry has realised in the last 10 years or so, even less, that people like returns. They like actors to come back to things. Maybe the last, you know, Star Wars with Star Trek, you know, Picard, even down to things like Star Trek's Prodigy animated series where Will Wheaton's come back, spoilers. You know, there's...
What?
Yeah, I thought you'd care. that is the nature of things. People want to see returns. And Robert Downey Jr. is not going to come back as Iron Man. You know, he's done it. He doesn't seem to be that sort of person who needs to. I mean, he's just done Oppenheimer and been nicely awarded for it. So it's not like he needs to come back to it. But to actually come back to what will probably be a nice fee, to a nice, meaty, interesting role, which allows him a lot of power to flex his own acting muscles as he wants to.
Yeah.
And for Disney and MCU, the way it took the Comic-Con, didn't it?
Yeah.
Anything that DC was doing, and obviously James Gunn's doing stuff with Superman, and that franchise is building up, and like we said, Doctor Who and the Star Trek stuff and all that stuff is absolutely eclipsed by Robert Downey Jr., even eclipsing all the other stuff which is going on in the MCU, as you say, like Fantastic Four, which I know he's attached to, but that is what got people. I mean, he even beat the drone Galactus coming up.
Yeah.
That was forgotten compared to Robert Downey Jr. So people saying it's just stunt casting, yeah, it is, because it's an industry, it's a commercial industry.
Yeah.
But I think it's also creative casting. It's being smart, finding ways to keep the discourse moving. Everyone's talking about it. That's good for Marvel.
There's a poll on IGN. Was Robert Downey Jr. being cast as Doctor Doom the right move for the MCU? 61,000 people have voted, nearly 62,000. And 56.3% have voted no, 43.7% have voted yes.
But then you've got to say who are the sort of people who are going to vote in those polls.
Well, indeed. I think it's kind of cool. As I mentioned, I'm baffled about the whole Fantastic Four thing. I honestly thought they were going to go for a 1960s thing, not a multiversal contemporary New York that looks like the 1960s. Also.
Oh, is that what they do? I didn't know that. I mean, technically another spoiler, but I'll let you. I should.
Well, that was released at Comic Con, so that's.
I knew that they were doing the 1960s vibe. I didn't realize, and I knew it was multiverse. I didn't realize it was doing a Fallout approach of. Which feels it's inspired by that.
Possibly, yeah, yeah. That's the impression I'm getting from it anyway. That's aside. Fantastic Four, I used to love the Fantastic Four cartoon, so I feel like I've got a bit of a... And I used to get some of the comics as well, the Secret War 2 in particular. I bought all of those, and the Fantastic Four were quite heavily in that. This is the 80s Secret Wars 2, obviously, not the 2000 Secret Wars.
I mean, Fantastic Four is an interesting one, because... Back in its heyday, and I must confess, I'm not a big Fantastic Four fan. I'm not up on its massive continuity, but certainly its earlier versions seem to very much be kind of modelled a little bit on a nuclear family, not quite,
yeah,
but to sort of have a married couple, you know, they all lived together, the brother was close as well, they had their friend, and later they did have a child, but it felt very much... That was especially the dynamic between Sue and Reed Richards. Now, obviously, that's changed and shifted over the years as culture has changed as well. But I'll be interested to see how they play with that, because it is kind of its time, the Fantastic Four, in some ways, even though, as I say, I do acknowledge it has been changed, updated and creatively played around with by, especially in the comic books. But
yes.
That is an interesting thing about it. It's a bit like Fallout in that sense. It's kind of, you know, the 50s, 60s, Fallout for the 50s, Fantastic Four, I always conceptualize 60s. It feels of that time.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why they've done it as a now 60s. Maybe that'll be kind of, means that they're not so trapped into that sort of cultural history. And they can play something which a little more modern, but with an aesthetic which... suits the film and the legacy. Interesting. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. There's a load of other stuff going on. Like you mentioned the Galactus drone display, which looks amazing. And obviously it was, there's lots of oohs and ahs for that. And then the Robert Downey Jr. thing happened. Galactus is being voiced by Ralph Ineson. I've just found out who... is a well-known voice artist and actor in the UK. He's most famously known in the UK as being a character in The Office, the Ricky Gervais Office.
Right.
Yeah, he's in that. But he's on. He does one of the big car adverts. I can't remember which one it is. You just hear his voice, and he's a busy actor. So that's quite interesting. He has got a booming voice. It is kind of suitable for Galactus. So there's something I've just spotted as well. Before we move on, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is coming to Magic: The Gathering, which is really annoying because I've really, really struggled to keep away from Magic: The Gathering, and then. This has happened, and I know that it's going to end up being bought, and then the whole thing's just going to explode over me, and I'm going to get everything. Because I've got a Monty Python card game. There's a Monty Python Flux game, which it just causes absolute chaos. It's hilarious. And that's largely around based around the Holy Grail as well. Which it's interesting how they both focus on the Holy Grail rather than TV show or The Life of Brian. But there you go. I suppose maybe Holy Grail is considered to be funnier than some.
Yeah, I think that's probably the reason. And it's got reach, hasn't it? More people have seen
yes.
Holy Grail globally than probably the series.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's such a lot to look at with regards to this, so I would recommend that you take a look at the IGN page I'm looking at is a good place to check out everything that happened at San Diego Comic-Con 2024. I would like to put an update on the website concerning the Star Trek and Doctor Who game, and I probably will, but the website's not working at the moment. There's a server issue which I'm trying to fix for all you technical people out there. That's interesting, isn't it, James? And some other bits and bobs that I should probably tell you about before we move on to the next bit. First of all, What you're about to hear is a conversation between myself and James and Gareth Cavanagh a few weeks ago concerning Cutaway Comics and what they are doing in this across the summer and what's coming later on in the year from them.
This was this James won't know about the Chris Evans spoiler.
Exactly, yeah.
So bear that in mind. That this James you're about to hear is happier than the James you're now hearing.
And now, if you subscribe to our Patreon for the very low introductory price of $1 a month, you may have already heard this. If you don't, remember, $1, that's just 70p, guys, in the UK. And it helps us cover the hosting costs. So that bit's coming up, and we're going to start doing this. We're going to start holding material back from the main podcast and releasing first on Patreon. So you will have heard this show first if you subscribe to the Patreon, and then a few days later, it'll go live to the rest of the world, to the other 1,000 listeners. So that brings us to the end of this bit, and here you go. You can now listen to me and James chatting with Gareth Cavanagh about Cutaway Comics. Gareth Cavanagh, Cutaway Comics. You've been running this for a while. And, you know, I don't actually know the details of Cutaway Comics. I might be overstating your role there. You might just be like a face for Cutaway Comics. And it's actually operated by 17 rabbits with a typewriter. I don't know.
God, imagine. Wouldn't that be nice? No, like a lot of these ideas, they've got their genesis sort of 10 years ago.
Well, you were talking about this whole Doctorless universe or the other thing, there's all like the spin-off comics, more than 10 years ago, I think.
Oh, yeah, it was in the Lascari. So that was my old pub in Manchester.
Yeah.
I remember finding some notes the other day that I wrote during the Halo Jones. We did Halo Jones as a stage play during those rehearsals. And it basically said Leela comic, Paradise Towers comic, Lytton comic, and Iron Legion sequel. And actually, we looked at all those. So we looked at the Leela comic, and I went to Chris Boucher, and Chris thought, yes, he still owned Leela. And I thought that was really exciting. Uh-huh. We were going to do like kind of, Leela and the Sever team on a sort of quest for something in that amazing savage jungle. Would have been brilliant. So I just thought, I'll just check that Chris still owns it. So I spoke to Guy Russell, and he went, no, the BBC owned that. And I went, are you sure? Chris thinks he owns it. No, he doesn't own it. I went to Richard Bignall, the great sage, and he said, no, Chris did own it, but he sold it to the BBC in 1978 after there was a dispute over the Leela doll and who owned what.
Oh.
So the BBC tidied it up and bought Leela off him. So that was out. I looked at an Iron Legion sequel because I thought, well, that's good. The Iron Legion is a wonderful, complete world. That would be fun to revisit. So I went to Pat Mills, and Pat was kind of lukewarm on the idea. So you go, well, that's fair enough. That's not going anywhere. But Lytton, I bumped into Eric Saywood at a do. And I was meeting Philip Hinchcliffe to talk about something. And Eric was just sat across the table. So I just sort of slid a card over and said, let's talk comics. So Lytton sort of got up and running as a comic that Eric wrote. And then Paradise Towers was, I had a meeting with Stephen Wyatt, and I pitched him Greatest Show idea in Paradise Towers. And he went, actually, I think I like the Paradise Towers one. So that happened. So all this sort of came together quite slowly, actually, between about 2016 and 2020 when we did our first Kickstarter. So it was sort of happening in the background a lot. And then it, you know, we were all locked at home in 2020. I was thinking about what a horrible time that was. But good things came out of it. And it was, you know, what came out of it is I had brilliant friends, writers, artists who were sat at home with nothing to do, going slightly mad. I was sat at home going slightly mad in a relationship that was disintegrating pretty quickly over lockdown. So this became my misery project that I'd scuttle off to the workshop and sit on the laptop and drink tea and, you know, and dream of producing comics. So we did. It was almost as simple as that. And then since then, we've kept the production line going, and now we've added big gorgeous format books with Roundel books, with the Hinchcliffe and the Go Figure book, and you know, we keep going. We see where we go. We see where we end up. I there's lots of lovely things I'd like to do. There's amazing people I'd like to work with, and we see where we end up. That's all we can do.
I remember we talked to you about the Omega thing with Brian Blessed.
Oh yeah.
A few years ago, with that beautiful graphic. But there's you've done a few since then. There's
audios, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we do, we've the CDs have just arrived for three Paradise Towers spin-off audios that Stephen Wyatt wrote, which is brilliant, good fun, all directed by Sean Mason. And they're brilliant, you know, because they're varied. One is basically Maddie's diary, so that's one of the cannibal old ladies, although we're not sure she's a cannibal, this one. She seems to be the nice one, narrating her diary of moving in. We've got a brilliant one about a lone wall scrawler, Kang, which is all done in Kang speak, with Kerry Eli's brilliant in that. And then there's the big one. It's like the half an hour audio, which is all about the great architect. So it's a kind of hero story for the great architect. So he's basically designing a mausoleum for a thinly disguised Donald Trump of outer space, and he gets a hero moment in that. And he's played by Ian Reddington, the chief.
Oh, okay.
And that was Stephen Wyatt's personal pick. He said, "That's who I want. That's who I would really want to play that." And he's brilliant. He was great to work with. Sheffield lad. I didn't realise that with Ian Reddington, because I always only see him in RP stuff. And he went, no, Sheffield lad. Sheffield.
He did a bit of Coronation Street as well, didn't he, about 15 years ago?
He was Vernon, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
My brother used to see him in his Budgie Smugglers down the Manchester Aquatic Centre every week. So, yeah, he was Vernon in that. And he was Tricky Dicky in EastEnders before that.
Of course he was, yeah.
It was a big role for him, and they wanted him to stay and make him a big focal point to almost replace Dirty Den, and he turned him down and left. So yeah, he was great fun to work with, and you know, we chatted about Sheffield Wednesday a lot, and but he enjoyed it. You know, he turned up. We got a full day off him in Salford, and then we went to the pub, and we had a lot of chats. And he's an interesting guy and a quality actor. So we're doing all sorts. And the other thing we do, which is probably similar to what you guys, is because every comic comes with a DVD full of VAM, value added material, and they always have a brand new commentary track with people from so commentary tracks on old Doctor Who mostly, and some new Doctor Who, with people who are already, who are in it, actors, writers, directors, producers, and you get those tracks as well. Some people buy the comics just for the VAM discs and throw away the comics, which is heartbreaking.
What?
I know. We do have people who just go, "I'm not interested in the comic. I just want the disc." So, fair enough. But we've got a body of about 30 commentary tracks now, so it's quite a thing in its own right.
So you've got cutaway comics. And presumably you've got some stuff planned out for that into the future. So that's going to be a long-term ongoing project.
Yeah. We've got projects to do. So I think in July we'll be kickstarting Gods and Monsters 2. So that is two more comics. So that is Drax. That's a Drax two-parter. So that's Bob Baker's character from... he's like a kind of mechanic, not a very good Time Lord, from the Armageddon Factor. A lot of fun.
Yeah. That's
Ian Winston, Steve B. Scott. So that's great. So we've got Drax in 70s London, but also in 70s LA. So we thought, well, why does it always have to be grungy London? And so we've got that coming. We've got Iris Wildtime. That's complete. That's got comics complete. That's Sean Mason and Libby on the art. So they're brilliant. Who's mostly known as T Dalek online. She's been brilliant. So that's done, complete. And then there's Losco, he's the last of the new characters we're bringing in. That's Steve Gallagher of Warriors Gate fame, has written that. And this character is pulled out of the opening chapter of his Target novelisation of Warriors Gate, which was obviously more expansive and much bigger. And so this is a brand new character who Steve wrote, in 1980 during the ITV strike. But he's got a big part to play. So that's coming as well. So that's going to be July, and then I think August is going to be the eagerly awaited, and I can honestly say it's eagerly awaited because we announced it 3 years ago, so how long it can be, Happiness Patrol comic by Steve Lyons and Ade Salmon. And I think that'll be our biggest, you know, because we've had so many people asking us about when is a Happiness Patrol coming, and I can finally say August. So we've got that. And then longer term, I think we're following up the Hinchcliffe volume with the Graham Williams volume. We planned this before the documentary that was on the season 15 set came out, but you know, we know there's a lot more interest in Graham's work now, and I've always liked his stuff. You know, I love the Horns of Nymon loveliness. So that's coming out as well. So we've got, you know, we've got a big slate for the next 6 months, so you won't be short of Cutaway comic stuff and Roundel book stuff.
So presumably you announce stuff on Cutaway Comics and link it to the related crowdfunding page.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff going on in the background. So there's loads of work going on Gods and Monsters 2 at the moment. By the time we crowdfund Gods and Monsters, I think it will be 60% complete.
Right.
So, you know, this is the downside of this business, is you have to pay for an awful lot of stuff before you ever open and get any money in.
Yeah, yeah.
So that can be a challenge. In theory, when I stop it all, I might actually make some money. Wouldn't that be nice? But no, it's fun. You know, we do it because, you know, I suppose, and you guys are, I think you guys are kind of a good example of this. You know, we love this show. Sometimes we hate it. Sometimes it drives us mad. But we mostly love it. And we want to put some in back into that show. You know, you guys do it with all of your podcasts and all the other things that you do, and projects about completely screen authentic TARDISes, and I do it with comics and fanzines and, you know, and other silly things. So we're kind of, it's like we're all working on this enormous great big tapestry that will never be finished, and I like that. I like that.
No, you've depressed me now about it not being never finished.
Well, it can never be finished.
Well, no, it can't, can it? I've just got that completist element to me, although
some things will be complete, of course. You know, I think we're close to having the original run will be complete when the animations are done,
and we will be done eventually.
I mean, I love the Celestial. What did you guys make the Celestial Toy Maker? Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
No, not seen it yet.
The last thing I watched was the the last of those things I watched was the colorized Daleks, which wasn't even a cartoon. But I enjoyed that. Yeah, we talked about that, didn't we, James?
Yes.
But give the Celestial Toy Maker a go. I can't recommend it highly enough. It is so good. It's so expansive and different. It's trying to do something different. Because, you know, I love the Celestial Toy Maker as a character, but my God, I've never been able to follow the plot on audio. I mean, part one is all beeps. And I didn't even understand what they were doing until I'd seen the animation. Honestly, it's so expansive. There's a sequence in part three where they're basically filling dead air where I think in the original it would have been, because they were just busking it by the sound of it. There were three dancers stood on a stage for 90 seconds and that's it.
Okay.
Riveting. But in the animation, the whole thing is like a psychedelic panorama. It is the equal of anything I saw in The Giggle. So it's worth it just for those 2 minutes.
Okay. Good recommendation. We haven't done one of those for a long time, have we?
So, yeah, that's me. Celestial Toy Maker. Go and watch it.
Excellent. Good recommendation. Thanks, Gareth. So you can learn more about Cutaway Comics at cutawaycomics.co.uk.
And yeah, lots of goodies to come. And I think we'll be doing a summer sale later in the summer where you can pick up whole runs of the comics with our last bits of stock for about a fiver. So you'll be able to get all four DVDs and a complete story for £5.
Excellent. thank you very much for listening to this week's Casterbris. We'll be back next week, maybe, or very soon, for another discussion about stuff related to things that we like. I don't know what we're going to talk about next time. It might be House of the Dragon, it might be Lords of the Rings, it might be Doctor Who audience figures, it might be the BBC, it might be that other thing that we were talking about that we've both forgotten about at this point, or it might be Chris Evans returning as Johnny Storm. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.